This is episode 255. But Justin, what about the shareholders?
I want the dramatic chipmunk sound. Bum, bum, bum. So this week we just spent a super, super long time on Slash's new amp.
And a super long time
on my music mixing workflow, apparently. Very, very self-indulgent, I felt.
There's some stuff in this episode that we hate and some other stuff that we love. So it's a little bit of everything.
Much better way of putting it.
Yeah, just a little bit of everything.
I like it.
Hello, Justin.
Hello, Derek.
How is you?
Doing good. Yeah. It's let's see. My kid she's done for school for holidays. Mm-hmm. So today was home and didn't have any plans to do anything with her. So I was just like, I'm at work, kid. Here's all the stuff you can do. She's 8 now, so she's pretty good at that.
Pretty good at self-sustaining.
She's sort of bummed. She's like, so maybe you can take like 20 minutes at some point and like play with my little dolls with me. And I was like, okay, kid, you know what? Yeah,
that sounds like a fair deal.
I owe you at least that much. I did end up blowing off a little early and going to play with her for a while instead. But yeah, so it's cool. And
but Justin, what about the shareholders?
God damn it, it's always the shareholders. That's how they get you. But what will the board say?
The board. Yeah, you got snow?
Yeah, and it's you know, it's like a dusting. But actually, yeah,
to be a big deal over there.
It came down in these flurries, and like the second one was like insane. Like you couldn't see 10 feet in front of your face, and it was like sideways snow. but then it calmed down into like normal flakes and accumulated, you know, just like a dusting. Not really. So you could still see the grass. You know what I mean? It was like that much snow. But my kid was born in Ohio. So she doesn't know that that's not snow. So she was like, yeah.
Oh my God.
She's like, oh, she's getting her stool. She's getting her snow pants out of I got to put all this stuff on my body. She takes her sled outside. She's like dragging it around. Yeah. I was like just inside work and she comes in and she's got this snowball like in her arms, like this giant, she's like, I took a bunch of time and I made this. And I was like, oh my God, why'd you bring it in the house? So I had basically unsupervised kid playing in the snow today. Nobody arrest me.
That's perfect. So, I love that. Not fully unsupervised. I talked to her for about 3 seconds today.
Yeah, that's the other thing. She fucking calls her. I had just come in to like just, I hadn't been in like an hour. And so I was like, well, I should just, I'm going to top up my coffee and see what Arya's doing. And I hear someone say, okay, bye. And I was like, who'd you call, you know?
Yeah, so I'm just like, I was in the kitchen like getting some water or something in between things at work. My phone starts ringing and it's like FaceTime call from Arya. I'm like, what?
What?
it's Monday, and I forget what time it was, but it was like the middle of the day.
Middle of the day, yeah.
Yeah, and I pick up, and there's no one there, right?
It's like pointed at the ceiling.
It's pointed at the ceiling, and I'm like, hello? And she just like pokes in from the side. She's like, oh, hi. I was like, what's going on? She's like, I called you by accident. I bumped it. I was like, oh, that's okay. What are you up to? So we just like chatted for a second. And she was like, I think she was a little embarrassed actually.
Yeah. But,
It was still
probably worried
fun.
That she was going to be in trouble or something.
But. No, I was just like, oh, are you home from school for break? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, cool. So what are you doing? Nothing. You just like classic kid responses.
Right? Yep. Right.
It's like, all right, well, I'll see you later. Have a good, and I was like, okay, bye. It was good to talk to you. And she's like, okay. And just like kind of kept saying, okay. And yep. Okay.
Yeah. You're going to have to hang up on her. Yep.
Yeah. She ended up hanging up, which is funny, good. But she was just, I think she was like nervous about like, okay, bye. Like, it wasn't this officially sanctioned phone call. And I don't know. It's so funny. Yeah. All right. See ya.
Oh, that's cute. That's cute.
So, yeah. Well, we did not get snow. We got like approximately 3,000 inches of rain here.
Oh, no.
It has been raining so hard all day. Yeah. And I had like a really weird day because it was just so dark the whole day. It basically seemed like the sun never came up. It was that gloomy and raining consistently extremely hard for 10 hours, 12 hours, something like that. So it's just been like, oh, man, we're like really in it. And I don't know. Now it's just like everything's kind of flooded and it sucks.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Damn.
But yeah, yesterday was the final day of my term that I was teaching. So I'm like, I'm in this weird zone of like, oh, I have this like kind of free time for a few weeks. And
then like the next grades are in and everything. Or is that kind of automated for you?
I have to manually submit grades, but I did it earlier. And like it calculates.
So that you could still like make adjustments if you had to, kind of thing. Yeah. So that part of it.
Or if there's like, if there's late assignments or anything like that. But yeah, I submitted it all to the registrar today and I was like, well, okay.
There we go.
I guess I'll just go about my business. It's not that it's been taking up a lot of my time or anything, but it has been taking up a lot of my like attention and a lot of my like bandwidth just mentally, because I want to be there for my students and I want to, I've had some bad instructors in my time and I've had some really great ones and I'm just like trying really hard to set up good habits for myself because this was the first term. So, it just sort of ends and it's like, ta-da.
Our grades were due in on the 13th. My last period, well, I think I talked, did I talk last time? It was after the 9th, right? So the 9th was our last class period and then grades were due in on the 13th. And there was a couple of people who did a late assignment because I told them I'd give them half credit for late assignments. So a couple of people popped in there at the end. But yeah, it was just like the process of punching in. And I didn't know what I thought was going to happen either, right? Like, is there going to be this grand thing? Like,
farewell.
Oh,
students.
Congratulations, faculty and students, on another great term. You know,
you've done
just,
it. Yeah.
Just nothing happens. You just.
It's pretty anticlimactic. I did get some nice emails from some students that were like, you know, I learned a lot. I had a really great experience. And I was like, oh, that's like so nice, so validating to hear in my first term. So that was good. But yeah, I picked up the next one, which starts on the 8th. So yeah, I was just like getting that set up, getting that ready to rock today.
Cool. I was about to say, I didn't get any nice emails, but I suppose I saw everyone in person on their individual last day. And so I had a few of those conversations. But
so like all day today. It's dark. Yeah. It's December, right? I have finished this thing with my job and I'm like, right? Like I can maybe, and I'm like feeling really behind the eight ball with Christmas right now too. It's just like not coming together this year and it's frustrating and it's like in 7 days or something. So anyway, so I sit down to eat dinner a little while ago and put on a show because I'm a normal person and watch TV while I eat food. And Beth is like, so
everybody
podcast tonight. Beth was like, so podcast tonight. And I was like, oh no. I had completely forgotten. Like
we're never
like,
going to
really forgot this time.
This is like a segment of the show where we just kind of make casual reference to how we have absolutely no idea what we're doing.
Yeah. But like that has turned into like, oh, I'll usually check for some stuff to talk about on the day we record instead of in the weeks between. And this was like, uh-oh, I have to go record in 30 minutes and I squarely forgot the whole day.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where we are. There is one thing in the notes that I
there's hate. There's a guitar new. See, because it's as though there's only one.
There's only one new, yep.
There's only one new today.
Not multiple news.
I love that. I'm very pleased that I said that.
And so, yeah, it's just, I actually remember when I told you I got rear-ended?
Yes.
When that was, what, 3 months ago in September or something?
At least two or three episodes ago.
It was way longer ago than that. Yeah. But yeah.
In a drive-thru, right?
In a drive-thru, right. Yeah. I was waiting for a coffee and I got bumped from behind. And it squished in the back of the car and stuff in a way that's like not... my car is like fairly new still, so I don't want to just ignore it. It's finally getting fixed tomorrow.
All right. On the solstice. on close to it.
Fucking that fucking long, right? To get an appointment. So
unbelievable.
It's insane. So
the earth
I'm
is
like,
literally in a different place in space. It's taking so long.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, I called the insurance company and the body shops, and they're like, yeah, all the body shops in New Hampshire are like really booked. Like really booked. And the insurance guy was like, he said something like, we don't know what's going on up there.
So he's like not in New Hampshire, the insurance guy. He's like, I don't know what's up with your state, sir.
He's like, yeah, I don't know what's going on, but all these places are booked. So you're just going to have to do the best you can. I was like, okay. It's a weird thing to say. But yeah, sure enough. So now I have an appointment tomorrow morning and I got to leave my car for like 10 fucking days to get fixed. And
oh my God.
So I know. So, and guess what's happening in the next 10 days? Fucking Christmas.
It's going to be that there are holidays. Yeah.
That they're gosh darn holiday. So, we're renting a minivan on the insurance company's dime.
Hey, and try out minivans.
Yeah. Cause
what if you like it?
I think we will. I think because we're traveling with the dog too.
Yeah.
So it's like a full car.
Right.
Cause Charlie travels in his crate. So like I figured whatever we rent, even if they give me the same car that I have, it's not going to have the roof rack that will fit my Thule box. So I need something that inside is bigger. So I was like, how about a minivan? And the guy was like, yeah, that's budgeted for with the insurance company, X dollars per day, whatever. I was like, yeah, all right. Now we're talking. I can just like drive a living room across New England and we'll be good to go.
I haven't experienced real minivan-ness since I was... you know, like a teenager, and my parents had one, I think.
Mm. Yeah, I had one when I was a kid. We had one when I was a kid.
I bet they've come a long way. I bet it's
some
very,
friends of ours,
very Cadillac by now.
Some friends of ours have one, and we've driven it into Boston for like if the gang is going to a concert or something, to something like that. And we hop in, and it's just like, this is great, right? Why is there all this shade on minivans?
Why do I feel this way about, why have I been cultured to feel the way I do about minivans?
And like everybody's got their own space. You got tons of room.
Everyone's got a captain's seat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, this actually rules.
You know, that's funny. So we had a rental instead of our RAV4 for a couple of days. Actually, through a week, it ended up rolling over because there was some kind of recall thing to do with the charger, the electric, because ours is a plug-in.
Yeah.
And it stopped getting enough juice out of its charger. Its charger wasn't producing as much as it used to. And it turns out there was some kind of recall part, but they had to have it for a little while because the part is very, every time, and I think this isn't typical if you were like on the states that touch water kind of zones in the country, because the RAV4 Prime is like very... It's very
hard to
green
find.
Leaf kind of situation for Toyota. So they really focused it on the states that seem to like that stuff. And Ohio apparently does not qualify for that shit. We drove to Vermont to buy this car. That's what happened.
Yeah.
Every time we have somebody work on it and it's anything other than just routine maintenance, they're always like, oh, geez. Oh, man.
Difficult one. We don't have the part.
And it's like eventually we get a bunch of like, I've never seen this car before. You're the only one we know. By the way, I have seen another one in Cincinnati.
I've seen a few around here, just like one or two, and I think it's probably the same person.
Right. I've seen like one other Prime in our city. But anyway, they get this like, eventually the service manager's like, okay, so listen, I'm not going to lie to you. This is a rare car, and I have the info. Like I have the info, but I'm going to be reading it in order to work. You know what I mean? Like he's not going to lie to me, but he's, so anyway, they had
it's
it
like
for
we're,
a while.
We're learning it together here.
Right. So
one
why
chapter
did I, why
the
did
class.
I go on this crazy story? Oh, cause we had a rental and they gave us like a Tacoma or something, which is like a full fucking SUV. Or no, so you're right. Tacoma. It wasn't that. It was an SUV, but it was like a full fucking sized SUV.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
not
like
a crossover.
Yeah, like Toyota's equivalent to like a fucking
Sequoia?
Whatever it is, Escalade or Sequoia. Yeah. That might have been it. Anyway, it was giant. So like the back seats are all like captain's chairs and they got the arms. And Aria was having a day.
Oh, she must have been. She's like driving around in her bedroom. Yeah.
She was having such a good time. And she went out there. She like brought toys out there and she just played
so
in the car.
Room.
in the garage. That was her playhouse for like 2 or 3 days. After school, she just brought things and she was like, hey, come on out here. And she played, now we're an airplane and I'm the pilot. And then she'd climb into the back and now we're a bus and I'm a this. And oh, the food service is coming around. And she had like a tray. It was crazy. I don't know why I didn't tell that story already. It's hilarious, but I'm glad it made it into an episode.
That's so good. Wow. Yeah.
Just thrilled as fuck.
I know Jack's going to be like, the fuck? This isn't our car.
Have him stand up, run around in it. Hey. He's going to think.
Honestly, he could.
Yeah. You got to point out the greatness to him, and he's going to be like, this is awesome.
Whoa. And then he'll just have a harder time getting in the car seat.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Maybe don't reveal to him that sometimes you can be not in a car seat.
Yeah.
If that possibility is a mystery, then...
Not being in the car seat has entered the chat. Anyway, we should talk about the show.
Okay, we should. All right, let's do something. Let's do something show related, and I'm going to play a thing. All right, so first up, a bit of who gives a fuck news. From your boys down at Magnetone?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Wait, hold on. I got to pull up my thing. Yeah. No, you go ahead.
Okay. So Magnetone and Slash are in cahoots.
They love it. They love each other.
Which I'm a little surprised about, considering that he's like the Gibson brand ambassador or whatever that it means. And now they own Mesa Boogie. So like... It's just surprising to see him being endorsed by someone else. Magnetone has put out this, I guess, JCM 800 inspired.
Sure looks like it to me.
Amp head with Slash's name on it. And it's like $5,000. And I'm really struggling with the concept behind like artist endorsements and the price.
Yeah.
And like the impracticality of a 100-watt non-power scaling tube head.
Right. I mean,
with
no direct out
or anything. Like,
you have to be in that zone. Yeah. So that's, I mean, that's what like, we got. It's probably a relatively faithful JCM 800 kind of thing. Like I take it from your rant there, they're not putting modern appointments on here.
It's just like, it is just the amp, and that's cool. Like, look, I know I am not playing the same game Slash is playing, and like, that's totally fine. This is a product
you're not turning up in insurance commercials.
No, this product is not for me. And like, it's the company has not made this with me in mind, which is totally fine. I think it's just kind of, I don't know. The tone deafness is kind of surprising to me as we like move into this like future state of guitar stuff, specifically amps. And there's still this narrative of like, yeah, but the tone, right? The tube tone and like, but the guitar legends.
As if this
legends,
is the only way to achieve a sound that would satisfy the Slash.
The Slash guy. Right. It's, and it's
I like
4,000.
I like this green alligator skin or whatever the hell. That's probably why it costs
snake skin.
So much.
Yeah, it's cool looking. I'll give him that. I wish Slash's fucking logo wasn't scribbled on it, but whatever.
That'd buff out.
Just grind it out.
I would love that. You pay $5,000 for like the collector's item signature amp and then just fucking buff it out with a little angle grinder. Oh, yeah, we can take that right out there.
Looks like shit afterwards. So I don't know, it's got an effects loop, it's got the two foot switchable gain modes and stuff, and like it's got a master volume and things like that, which is cool, but like it's objectively cool in the way that like all guitar gear is cool and like big loud amps are cool, but it's $4,900 for just the head,
right?
And there's a matching cabinet that is also $2,700, and I'm just like,
that's
really
a lot,
struggling,
man.
I'm really having a hard time with a $2,700 412 that has nothing but regular stock vintage 30s in it.
What's up with this little socket though here?
What is that? Oh,
it's got MIDI. It's got mini jacks on it.
It's not a 5-pin. It's 4-pin. It's for the lighting. There's lights in the cab.
There's lights. Well, that's why it's...
Well, hold the phone. It lights up the logo. That's all it does. Like, my Rev does the same thing. It's got the same connector. And just so you can daisy chain them together, it's just
That's kind of rad. So is that like, I didn't even know that there was a, so we're settling on a standard for our amp RGB, huh?
Yeah, it's just this little 4-pin connector that looks like MIDI, but it's missing a pin.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and again, looks sick, right? It's got the snake skin, which is very Slash's snake pit and all that stuff.
Exactly.
But again, like, it's a 412 with vintage 30s and it's closing in on $3,000. What?
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
The nice little angle back.
What the fuck is the matter with you?
So like if Mesa or Marshall makes me a 412, like an angle edition, like basically this is like bottom cab here is what I'm looking at. If I look at bottom cab, vintage 30s, I'm guessing $700.
Oh, it's more than that.
Is it? Okay.
Marshall 412. Let's see what Sweetwater says. I think they're like, so here's a Marshall, which is the one? Is it the 1960A? Oh.
I thought 1960A was like the one that's going to have greenbacks in it. But I could be wrong.
Here's a 412 angled extension cab. What's in this? Celestion G12E60s. And it's $650.
So you're
closer.
It's essentially vintage 30s, but yeah. Is vintage 30 confusingly a 60-watt speaker? Never understood that.
G12E60s in this one as well, $550. So the point is, like, you can get a Marshall brand or any other 412 really with kind of whatever you want in it, but a 412 with four vintage 30s does not $2,700 make.
So it's the snakeskin and the RGB.
And I don't know. It just kind of irks me. It feels gross. Like the we haven't really talked a ton about artist endorsements, but I think this is the kind of thing that is so clearly just like a brand deal.
Right.
You know,
right.
And there's some like blog post on the Magnetone website about how Slash tried a Magnetone amp in the studio earlier this year and it was a big hit and he was blown away. Like, great, whatever.
No, I don't buy that, because why the fuck would he then turn around and say, well, my signature is going to be an exact goddamn copy of the thing that I've been playing for 40 years?
Yeah. And so it's like a pretty close copy, but it's still like it's the Magnetone version. So it's a little different or whatever, but we're not going to budge on the speaker choice. Right. Like, so,
and they still copied the thing he's been after. So it's not like he encountered something that blew him away. That's not what happened.
He didn't plug into a deluxe. Like, he didn't plug into a Fender Twin.
Right. You know? He didn't plug into something different and say, oh man, you guys have really stumbled onto something here. No, he was like, well, sure, you can put my name on it. Just make me a thing that's basically what I already have. Put some snake skin on it. Charge a bill, and let's
do this thing.
Let's do it.
So I don't know. Like, artist endorsements. There's plenty of artists out there that I think deserve an endorsement, or I think would be really powerful people to have in an artist roster for a brand.
Yeah.
And I don't see them. Because again, like, I know my music taste and the artists I listen to are pretty niche, but Coheed, right? Coheed's a big band.
Yeah.
Why are they not on the Gibson roster, right? They both play Gibsons and they're really known for it.
Right.
And I'm just surprised that those guys aren't all over the Gibson homepage. And it's still fuckers like Slash and Gene Simmons.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Assholes. I don't know if Slash is an asshole. Gene Simmons is an asshole. Anyway.
You know what I'm saying, though. Like, get this gear into the hands of some people who are doing newer, and Coheed's not even that new,
artists like you're talking about, though, they do have endorsements. It's not Gibson. But they always have, like, bands like that, it's always like the drummer has a particular sticks and cymbals or whatever, and right. Like,
I think I'm just getting so tired of like the guitar legends angle, because these people have been in the narrative since I was like 14 and I'm just so bored of it.
Right. And that's from like you like a lot of classic rock.
Yeah.
So it's not like,
But I'm not out here saying that Slash is the end, right? Like, there's plenty of people who are right. thinking, like, Slash, Clapton, you know, yeah. all these guys are, like
there's the nobody's peak. Been happening since then, yeah.
Yeah, which is just false and kind of keeping your head in the sand. So I think there's plenty of other, I'm going on like a soapbox here, I guess, but there's plenty of other, I think, more modern and interesting artists that could move these brands in a direction that they are not exploring.
Yeah.
That would be really cool. And Fender does this all the time.
Yeah. I mean, what was going on in Magnatone's lineup that they needed to make this?
I think it's a bigger deal for Magnatone than it is for Slash.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
And I mean, is this, they probably already have this amp on their shelf.
Just something like it, I assume.
Being the signature model, right? Like without the snakeskin and the and having burned off the logo, Magnatone, the SL100. Oh, I guess it's not the SL, right? It would be the M100 or something.
Whatever, yeah. Magnatone, to me, occupies the same space as like Supro. I know they're like one right. of these old brands that like yes. did not get the massive success that like Fender, Marshall, Orange, Vox did. Mm-hmm. But they're still like really well known.
They're still there, and, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's just, I don't know. It's odd, I guess. And like Fender puts out a Corey Wong guitar, right? A guy, yeah. a musician who's kind of mostly only known by other musicians, let's say. Right.
Right.
Like there's obviously overlap, but I think that's a way more, and yeah, I'm fully aware that that's just a brand deal. Like they worked out the money and the specs and that's how it shakes out for that kind of thing. But I think he's still a way more interesting person to have in the lineup who's doing more interesting things musically. Yeah.
Than the guy who was famous 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And
is still
changed.
Just famous by proxy.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You know?
So if you make a so if you're Magnatone and you make something like this, how many do you make?
Oh. I mean, it's on pre-order.
Sometimes they say.
I don't think it's limited.
Oh, you think it's just going to be something they. All right. Well, I guess then what I mean is like, how many are you moving a year? How many units are you stocking?
So it says on the right on the MagnatoneUSA.com, Magnatone announces partnership with Slash. And his shirt's unbuttoned and everything. And he's looking real cool.
Yeah.
It's the first time he's collaborating with a new amplifier company in over 30 years. Like, is that the exciting part?
Apparently we were all just sitting around going, yeah, but what amp is Slash endorsing for the last 30 years? Where's Slash been on my people trying to convince me to buy an amp list?
The iconic Grammy-winning American rock guitarist, songwriter, and film producer, Slash. What?
Okay, me too, bud. Jesus.
Created Hold on. Signature no,
wait,
sounds.
Wait, let's not bury the lead here. Let's look up. So to Google Slash's film. Oh, no, I shouldn't look up Slash film, should I? Hold on, I take it back.
It's due out in early 2024. And it says here that he purchased several Magnatone M80s as well as a Twilighter stereo. Slash began testing both of these live and in the studio and was impressed, I guess. I don't know. It's just...
Okay. So let's cool. let's say we believe that story.
I'm willing to believe it.
That's fine. Then why did he, when he said, okay, I like your amps, now make me one, why did it become a JCM 800? If he tried out these other things in the studio and on stage, why didn't he say, make me one of these with snakeskin? No, he said, make me a JCM 800 with snakeskin.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
What is the M80? The Super 59 M80. Looks like it's a 45-watt EL34 driven.
It's a Marshall.
It's a British voiced master volume designed amp. So. Yeah.
That shit is a 50-watt Marshall, baby.
So.
Okay.
I think part of the thing that's really interesting to me too is that people, this will sell. Like stuff with sure. Slash's name, stuff with all these guys' names on it always sells. Who's yeah. buying it? Who is it?
Collector,
for?
Right?
I guess the blues lawyer. I don't know. It's who's like, oh, cool. Like, I love Slash so much.
Yeah.
I need this.
I mean, the thing
and the
is,
whole
like,
rig
I,
is so I get fucking the, expensive.
Like, I get the tone of your voice when you say that, but there is like,
I know.
And you know what? It's probably not dozens of people, you know? Mm-hmm. It's probably hundreds and hundreds of people.
So to go all in with the amp and cab is $7,600.
Yeah. So what about if you add the guitar too?
Oh, I don't even know. Which one? He's got fucking 700 different, you know, yep, such and such editions from Gibson.
Ring him up.
All right, let's see. Slash. I'm just going to search. So, I'm just going to search Sweetwater for Slash. Here we go. The Appetite Les Paul, $3,200. Okay.
Yep.
So I'll add, what did I say it was? $7,600?
76.
600 plus, what was it, $3,200? We're in over 10 grand now. And you can't be doing any of this without a wah pedal.
Of course. I assume we have a Slash signature wah pedal. Does he have signature strings?
I bet. Here it is, the $200 Slash wah pedal. God, what the fuck?
You know, that's really reasonable as far as Slash gear goes. That's what I've learned.
I don't see any Slash strings, but we're that you know, no strings, cables, speaker cables included. that pushes us into literally $11,000.
We're already hitting a roadblock if we actually want to make any music with our fully Slash guitarist outfitting here.
I think it's really funny that on this amp page, they're like, complete the setup, and it shows the cab, right? And it shows like a $10 speaker cable. It just strikes me as like, yeah, you can get everything you need.
That's not on here. Oh, there it is. Supposed, there's his belly button. I mean, Slash.
His belly button-ness Slash.
He's making that face.
I'm too cool to be here, but also duck lips. Oh my God. I really like, go back down to those features.
Okay.
The bullets next to Slash's belly button.
Yeah.
Right there. This is a feature, British inspired aesthetics.
You know, so I noticed this in the class I was teaching. I gave this assignment where I was just like, it was very fluffy. A lot of my assignments were, it was basically just prove that you read through the manual of this mixing console that we're using here. Hmm. And it was like a PDF, right? And so I was basically like, what's the range of the 30 Q knob? And I was like, literally copy and paste this to me. You'll prove that you poked through the manual to find it. You know what I mean? And I said, one of the questions, list me two features of this console. And because on one of the pages it says features, just like this, right? And it's a bullet list. And one of them was designed in Great Britain.
Not a feature.
Not a feature. And not one of my students, most of them picked out things that were features. And one of my students wrote, like, it has 12 faders. It's designed in Britain, comma, apparently. And I was like, full credit. You get 100% on this assignment.
Apparently. Oh, my God. That reminds me. In the final week of my class, the final project is due the week before the course ends.
Right.
So there's time to grade it and things like that. So the final week is often dedicated to like reflection work, critique work, stuff like that. Yeah. And in the reflection, it's like, you know, this is a very early course in the program. So, you know, a lot of first-time college students and things like that. And it's like, so just like reflect on your process. Like, what are the things that you like will take into your the rest of your program? Like, what are the most important things you learned, do you think? And how did this go? And just reflect on these things in 2 pages, very short.
Yeah.
And at some point, somebody thinks this is a review for my class and starts. Yeah. Which it's not. That's a separate process. But then they just, in the like near the end, in their concluding statement, they're like, so in conclusion, I would give this class a solid 84. It's like, okay. Okay, Miss C plus.
A solid 84.
She's like, my experience was overall positive, but I ran into trouble with blah, 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 whatever it was. I would give it a solid 84. And I'm like, what the fuck?
What do you think is happening here?
No, first of all, who asked you? Second of all, how
four
dare
stars.
You? So anyway, yeah, when their features like designed in England or British inspired aesthetics, it's not a feature.
Slash's Scully logo. That's
cool.
That's that shit that we were going to burn off.
Just buff it out.
The Logan mode is reminiscent of a 60s era British design.
Independent low and high gain knobs.
So reminiscent just means it will make us think about it, right? So if we hear this,
it makes you reminisce.
We will just think about the 60s.
Yeah.
those British tones of the 60s.
Another feature developed in collaboration with Slash himself. Not really a feature of the hardware.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, maybe it is. I don't know.
Well, okay. I'm going to call that a feature because that is not true for most other amps.
All right, fine. Yeah.
Technically a feature. high gain mode gives rise to the modded, cascaded gain preamp sound that ruled the 80s. So, hold on.
Yeah, so it's a vintage Marshall. It's a vintage modded Marshall.
No, Derek, you're missing it. This high gain mode gave rise to that.
Oh.
This is responsible for the high gain sound that ruled the 80s.
I thought that was Slash's belly button. just staring me in the face.
There he is.
What is up with that, dude? How old is he?
Too old for a belly button ring. Don't tell him
He's 58.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's too old for a belly button ring. You heard it here first, folks. 58.
So, all right, I'm gonna get Slash off my screen now.
So that's all. I hate this.
How long did we talk about it? I fucking hate this.
I hate it. I just think it's like so clearly.
It sucks.
Like it's just. Magnetone, like when they were looking at their market and they were looking at guitarists, I was on the deck that got thrown away. Like I am not the target customer and that's fine. I totally recognize that, but it's still just like, guys, read the room.
Right.
No.
Yeah. But they, they're going to make money, I bet. I mean, with margins like that, I'm sure the margin on this thing.
I've referenced this like Coheed with Gibson thing in the past, I think in Discord, and I cannot tell you how excited I would be if I found out that they're doing a Claudio Explorer. And because he uses these kind of obscure ones from the 80s that are, I think it's an Explorer 2, it's called, and it's got these other slightly different body shape and stuff, different construction. I think that would be so rad. And Travis has a handful of Les Pauls that are all super cool. I think that's a way more interesting conversation, I think. Like what is left to say about Appetite for Destruction?
I've got nothing for that.
Let's move on.
Okay.
Dude, I was in I'm going to squeeze in another thing that happened.
Okay.
Things here, cuz again, there's nothing else after the notes.
Do you want to play a bounce here? I'm going to play a here.
Sure.
Classic.
Wicked. I got my I got some letters after my name recently. I got a certified, I am now a certified Scrum product owner, which is a thing from work. It's a whole thing. So I'm a CSPO. Where was I going with this? Fuck.
That sucks. It was in the chamber.
This sucks really bad. It was right there. And I was like, yeah, do a thing. I'll remember. Nope.
Shit. I'm sorry.
That's okay. What are we talking about?
It was basically that you hate Slash and wish... No, you hate this amp and wish that Coheed had...
No, it's gone. Damn. Oh, it was like going to be a good story too. I can't remember.
Oh, man.
If it comes back, I'll just throw it in. But Well, don't you hate that? You can like, what yeah, I do. The feeling of like it's going away and right. you just can't grab it.
Can't quite. Oh, fucking sucks.
CSPO. What was it? Damn. Oh, well, whatever. Mm. What's going on? What do you want to talk about?
Well, so I was going to just, I guess I've been, I know this is not the first time I brought this up, but like I've been doing my music mixing in Luna, the DAW that UAD made. Apparently it was, it became a product like a lot longer ago than I thought. I guess it's because I waited years. I waited years before I kind of jumped on board. It only recently became free to use outside of for people who had the hardware.
I feel like I heard about it like a year or two ago. Is it older than that?
That's around when I started kind of paying attention. It is. It's like it goes back to, it goes back maybe till 2018 or something. Huh. Anyway, but there was a lot of growing pains and it was very, very buggy at first and had very few features. So it's a lot of things have been coming along and eventually I kind of, it kind of got to this level where I could really successfully use it to do a music mix. And I wasn't going to just get so stumbled that I just go, oh, this is stupid and drop it and move my shit back to Pro Tools or something. That kind of turning point, I think, coincided with when Avid started fucking me over with the cost of things. And like,
so yeah, I was going to
ask
you,
not happy about Pro Tools.
Is part of this a journey for you to explore leaving Pro Tools?
I've largely left Pro Tools. I think that has a lot to do with it. I really wouldn't have been poking around with things if Pro Tools hadn't gone and like changed the pricing structure. And at this point, what sucks now is like as of this calendar year, they've kind of gone back to the way things used to be. And if I just stuck to my guns, I probably would have been fine if I'd ridden out the like 5 years that you had to sit through this crap.
Refresh my memory. It was like an edition thing, like the new edition would come out and you'd buy it and you'd have that. And then it moved to subscription.
Yeah. So what they did is they did, you know, little dot releases all the time. They had gotten onto like sort of a dated release. So the whatever's going on is like the year dot the month. Okay. So there's not a release every month, but there's not two releases in a month, so they can just use that numbering. So basically, that's what they've been on since for several years now. Mm-hmm. What happened was previous to that, you would buy an update plan. So you would pay for updates for a year, and for that year, you're current and you are paying for support too. If you have problems, they will talk to you. I had a perpetual license, so if I stopped paying for that, I would just have whatever version I ended at forever, kind of thing. And that's the thing. If I had done that, I probably would have been fine. I wouldn't have missed any of those features. And then they would have just, Avid got bought. They're now private. They're no longer a publicly traded company. Okay. Yeah, that was a few months ago now too. So everything's kind of switching around and hopefully for the better for them. It's not like I wish anything ill of them, but unfortunately, in the meantime, I moved on. Like I basically anything that's kind of not music based, like dialogue based stuff, I'm doing in Reaper now, and I'm happier. The feature set is better, and its video support is better. There's a huge learning curve on Reaper, but anyway, I don't recommend it to beginners.
It's like too customizable, right? Like
and the defaults are insane. One of the major content creators like that's focused on Reaper is for people in my business. He has a video that is just called "The Defaults Are Insane," and where he just goes over, "Here's what my defaults are. You should copy these," kind of thing. So I'm using Reaper for dialogue, and I was still kind of using Pro Tools for music stuff, but I was like in the business to get out of it, and that's around when I tried Luna. And several, like in the year or so since I've been sort of paying attention to it, it really has come even a long way since then, and it's smoothed out a lot. So the last at least 20 music mixes I've done entirely in Luna. For at least the last year, every time I have an artist in my studio, because I have the hardware that goes with it, I'm using Luna because it's totally integrated and I can record with all of my like software UAD stuff. And it's without showing me, it's just in the background, it's changing between host-based and hardware-based as needed. Like if I have a mix that's full of shit, and I push record enable on a channel, it'll switch that channel and any reverbs and stuff that are attached to it to hardware mode so that they are latency free.
And like, you don't have to wait for that to happen.
On the fly. I mean, yeah. Maybe it pinwheels for a second if my computer's really loaded up. You know what I mean? But like it just goes,
still,
I'm on like, hardware mode now because it's taking, you know what I mean? And because that's why I got into this UAD stuff in the beginning, because the plugins that run on the hardware, I can do no latency mode on stuff like that. So it's the kind of integration that you want. It's that it's the workflow is what it really comes down to. So with these, I've been the last few weeks I've been working on like three different bands stuff, and just my head was so into the UAD thing and the holiday sale going on. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna pick up something. I went and picked up. This guy.
Oh, the diesel. Is it the VH4?
It's the VH4. So they UAD actually has two diesels. They have the Herbert as well.
The VH4 is like the one though.
Yeah, the Herbert's like a three channel and it's pretty good too. I think ultimately I A-beat them against each other and I come out.
Wow, it's just, like $100 off.
It's, yes. It's well, what we're seeing there, right? That's the current sale price. Like $44 is what they want for it right now.
That's a good deal.
Which is a good fucking deal. VH4, the fortune. For one thing, it's not that the Engel, the Savage 120 that I've been using for these kinds of sounds don't work, but this thing has a lot of killer clean tones and stuff too. It's kind of amazing that everything that's packed into this VH4, and I've never like played with one in physical form, but I don't know, the controller layout makes perfect sense. And now I look back at the Engel, the Savage 120, the front panel layout is a fucking nightmare. It's like figuring out which knobs are attached to which channel and how to switch the channels is insane. It's another BrainWorks developed plugin, so it has the same. What happens with these is you have the plugin, and I wonder if they'll show it here. Oh, there. So basically in the plugin interface, if you click the top part, it reveals sort of the plugin controls. Yeah. So, and this is the same, these are all the same controls as the Engel. All the BrainWorks amps have that. So you have your IR loader thing on the lower left. It has a built-in gate, which you can use if you want. It has these filters, sort of high and low cut filters, which are pretty useful for getting rid of rumble and extra sizzle. There's a built-in delay if you care to use that. It's right here.
Huh.
Syncs with the tempo. And then some sort of power soak features, right, that are purely digital. But like the control layout, anyway. This record I was working on, I recorded it all with the Engel Savage 120, but I did it with UAD. So I actually recorded a dry DI and we were just using monitor effects. So you can just throw it into this thing. So I literally, like, I got down to the mix and I just switched it to this and then A-beat it back and forth with this and the Herbert. And basically, because with UAD, you can demo them for 14 days. So I just like turned on my demos and, it's great. So it's a little less, I don't know, on the super high gain channel is a little less woolly, I think, than the Savage 120. Just on his guitar, I think different guitars might favor amp or the other. It's that kind of thing. I think on these mixes, I am liking that. Maybe it's because it's novel to me. I don't know. But it sounds great. But so I then like I picked it up, or I'm demoing it, and then I realized, okay, I'm definitely going to buy this. Well, the other thing about UAD stuff is, when you make a purchase, it actually refreshes your whole account as far as your demo status. So I know I'm going to buy something, so I may as well just demo anything else I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
Because when I make this purchase, it'll re-up those demos and I could do it again later if I felt like it.
Cool. Yeah.
So the other thing that can happen with Luna is... So here's these software bundles. And by the way, if somebody was interested in this from a software perspective, they currently have a deal, and I hope it's still going by the time this podcast airs. Oh, wait, this is coming out on Christmas. It probably goes through the 31st. But there's a deal. There's a deal right now where if you buy a 1 year subscription to Spark or something like that, I think, like, basically their native plugin subscription. That's like you're basically buying all the UAD plugins on a subscription. 1 year comes with a free Volt interface, which is like their Scarlett USB audio interface competitor. Yeah. It's not a DSP interface, but it's a really quality piece of kit. So if somebody was like had a cheapy interface and wanted to upgrade to a more pro little two channel interface, that'd be a deal to check out, because basically you're buying Spark for like $99 and getting a $99-ish interface for free.
Yeah.
And if you don't like Spark, you dump it after that. And what have you done?
Right.
You bought an interface and tried out UAD. So I'm trying to get down to the part. Okay. Well, here's some of the things. I don't know if what I'm showing on screen really matters, but the other thing that I tried out, because it was also had a really good sale price for me, especially because I owned a couple of these plugins already, and they always, like when there's a bundle, they scale the bundle price based on what you already own. So they have this thing, they have these things integrated into Luna where it's like a console simulation. So this is not entirely new. Like there have been plugins for a long time that simulate like what it's like to just run all your channels through an analog console. And essentially, it's just doing an almost nothing amount of processing to every channel. But by the time you put it over like 10 of them, it's like a little bit of soft clipping and a little bit of EQ and a little bit of gentle saturation based on how they modeled these consoles, right? So I tried out basically the API console bundle, which is a Luna extension. So in Luna, it has API summing, essentially pretends to be a console when at the points where the channels mix together, as far as a little bit of clipping and saturation, and it's adjustable headroom. It has basically the channel strip, which is a slight upgrade from the one I have because I bought it like a decade ago when I first got into UAD, but the API channel strip that they make, which has the whole thing, preamp, dynamics, EQ, output stage, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It has the bus compressor from API, the 2500. And possibly that's it. I can't remember if there's something else. I guess that's basically it. Well, the preamp, every one of those modules that's in the channel strip is also a separate module too. So technically the preamp as its own thing is a separate thing. So in the bundle, so basically I just get all these plugins separately. And I was like, whatever, I'll try it out. I really like that channel strip. And the thing is, sure, these are like exquisitely modeled console emulation stuff, but like I'm never going to tell somebody that's going to make your mix sound better. Because it's super subtle. And frankly, like when I mix through all those sorts of emulation sort of shit that piles up and does very small changes to every channel, I think I do notice that I'm using a little bit less compression and maybe a little bit less EQ because some of it just sort of happens. But it doesn't mean you can't just work without it and use a little bit more compression. You know what I mean? It's sort of almost pointless in that sense. But here's what I notice is because this is all integrated into Luna and like the console emulation is put in the right point in the chain and the channel strip, you can basically set this all to be default for Luna. So whenever I make a new channel, it has all this stuff. So I have a console there for me and I'm not like... So this is like a workflow change ends up being the biggest thing. So basically like I have a new channel, I make a new track, I drop my guitar on it. If I decide I want to EQ it or compress it, I have to instantiate a compressor, right? I have to go there and like, let's call up a compressor. Which one do I want to use? Let's call up an EQ. Which EQ plugin do I want to use? None of that happens now. I still can put plugins on it, but instead I've already got this channel strip basically in front of me. And it's already got just waiting. They're sitting there in bypass, just waiting for me to turn a knob and engage it. You know, I've got filters, I've got a gate, I've got a compressor. EQ. It's two different types of EQ because there's it's switchable. And just having them right there, and they're not the graphic type. So like there's two things that I notice as I've done these mixes. They came out great. Not that I think they wouldn't have without this, but they... it's just everything's kind of there in my face already, and I'm not hunting around like, oh, do I want to EQ this? It's more like, oh, this needs a little top. Okay. I just turn the knob. It's already right there, you know? And there's this tendency, and I've fallen for it so much too. Like I've gotten in this habit of like my go-to EQ is one of these where you can see the graph and you move the line. Mm-hmm. You grab little dots and move the line. Nothing wrong with that, but it's also got a spectral analyzer. So I can sort of see the shape of the spectrum of the audio on there, which means my eye is kind of guiding me what to do when I should be listening. And,
I see what you're saying.
So like I'm falling onto that thing.
That crutch of like what you're expecting to edit with and like what's influencing your,
I'm thinking this has too much bottom and I turn it on and I can see the bottom there in the graph wiggling around.
Yeah.
And it's like, now I'm going to grab that.
Yeah. And it's like, it's confirmation bias, right? You see it and you're like, I was right. Yes, there is that bottom there.
Yeah. Or maybe I see a peak somewhere and it wasn't bothering me, but when I see it, I go, oh, maybe I should duck that out. You know, and I maybe grab a little cut in the EQ there. So instead, you know, they have a picture of there aren't great pictures of this thing. I guess I should have called up the API thing. But the API, you know, it's basically there's a four band EQ and it's knobs. And I mean they're labeled. So I can say, oh, I wanted to go in for 8 kilohertz and adjust that, but I have to listen for it. And likewise, the other type of EQ is like a graphic EQ with sliders. And it's like, well, I'd have to grab the one I want and move it. Does it sound the way I wanted? No, move it back, you know? and that's what I'm into. And so I ended up buying the thing. So I ended up buying the VH4 and the whole thing because it's the integration that does it. Like I'm saying, it's not
well,
that
it just
these
makes your
sound
life
that
easier.
Much better.
Like it's, it's, yeah, but it's saving you time and headache.
Yeah.
Which keeps you focused, right? Yeah. Which will make things sound better is your attention. Yeah.
Right.
Right. It's all this, like, it's all connected somehow. It's just not one-to-one.
Right.
Like new gear does not make you play better guitar, right? It's just, well, it might make you play more and playing more makes you better. So,
these EQs might make me listen more. Like I might have been tricking myself sometimes, right?
Or it might just make you approach the whole thing a little bit differently for even just a little while. Like as you warm up to using it for the first few times, like you'll be excited to use a new piece of gear, which is worth something.
Yeah, it's. I don't think it's going to dramatically change the sound of my mixes, except if it's like that. If I would have done weird things with EQ because I was looking instead of listening, then that'll do it. If I would have done the compression differently, if I was looking instead of listening, the compression has very little feedback. You know what I mean? I can't see a graph of how close am I to the threshold. Mm-hmm. I'll adjust it. You know, it's, you know, most of them have auto gain on them, which is great too. But
I'm texting our buddy Taylor on the side here, like, because he has some Apollo hardware, and I was like, you should get this plugin. And he's like, dude, I already got it. Don't worry.
He's got they have an Eden bass amp.
That's the one
too,
I sent him. I was like, look.
I know he's going to, it's on sale if he doesn't have it already.
He does, yeah. I was like, you should, you probably want this, right? And he's like, dude, don't worry about it. I already got it.
You already got that one.
Way ahead of you.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, so at this point, like, I love that workflow. It's not necessary. Like it's an add-on to Luna, but I think it's a really good add-on. And it's not because it's this unachievable sound any other way, which is kind of, they do sell it. Like it's like, it's immaculately, every capacitor is modeled in the neural net of the blah, blah, blah. I mean, they do kind of use that language a little bit. And like, they have a penchant for the realism, right? So it's kind of a side effect in my opinion, but they seem really excited about it. When I turn on the UAD console, the API console emulation in here on a channel, it changes the way the fader looks in Luna. Mm-hmm. Because the fader throw now matches the taper of the API Vision console. So visibly, and when I move the mouse, it behaves with the logarithmic scale their faders on that hardware unit used, to the extent that like it will start to clip at the point where that console started to clip. So that's the other thing is like from a beginner perspective, if you never put any of this stuff, this analog stuff on your session, every DAW does like 64-bit floating point. Like your waveform could bounce off the moon 240,000 miles away before it clips, right?
In digital. You're just saying words at me now. So.
Well, okay. So, yeah, so okay.
I don't need the explanation, but yeah.
Floating, okay. Right. Floating point basically means it can move the decimal point. So the computer can effectively represent any number. It's like effectively impossible to clip when you're in floating point. And that's how everything processes now with modern computers. But when I put this on, it's not going to do that. It's going to start to clip because that's what it's modeled to do. So technically,
it should. Yeah.
By turning that on, I have the ability to fuck up my gain staging now in a way where gain staging doesn't matter has been sort of a theme of the last 10 years because if you really are working purely in digital, in many cases, gain staging doesn't matter.
I see. Okay.
So you have some rope to hang yourself by, but workflow wise, I just think like having them all there. So I'm not going to reach for some graphical EQ unless there's some really surgical thing that it turns out I do need to do. But I wonder, am I going to run into those cases now, or am I just going to accept what's there? And sometimes less is more.
Yeah. I think, it's, the tool, it's not like you're getting rid of a tool, right? So that will always be there if the case arises. But I think you'd have to decide, like, I don't know, would it be worth testing or worth, like, can you test this? Like, if you could do...
You can, with one click, you can bypass all the extensions.
I know, but I just mean, like, if you did, like, a whole shebang, like, a whole production on something in a day or whatever, just, like, a little short, like a demo, like, that I would do. And then a week later... Fresh ears, do it again the other way.
And not turn on the thing. Right, because you'd have to go through that whole process. Yeah. This is what you're saying to me, right? Like, because I can bypass all this stuff with a click just to check it. And yes, it sounds different. It's not
a huge but it is your behavior with the tools.
Right.
Yeah,
that's the thing you'd have to somehow A-B.
Which the only thing I can think to do would be to really separate them in time a lot. So you're by a week or a month or something like that. So you're... really like coming in fresh and not really thinking about what you did before.
Yeah.
Right. You know, that'd be
not remembering. You'd have to scramble your brain to not remember what you did. Yeah. It's, but it's cleverly integrated. So it's really, it's a neat little thing. I'm very, very happy with the way it works out because it's integrated into the DAW, but also, like I said, you can still put plugins in here and like where that channel strip happens, I can move that. Like that appears as this block in my plugins list. And it's by default, it's at the top. But like, for example, I have tracks that have drum triggers. Mm-hmm. So I don't want this console emulation before the drum triggers. I want it after the drum trigger plugin, right? Yeah. So I just move the console slot down there. And now, even though it's integrated into Luna and it appears in a certain spot on my screen, where it is in the signal chain is assignable by me so that I can make sure it's in that right spot. And likewise, I could take an old mix when I didn't have this API console, pull it all up, and just put the API console at the end and be like, okay, so here's my mix that I did without it. And I'm just A-Bing, basically I could just bypass or unbypass, like just the summing, just the, you know, the analog model of like what it sounds like in these faders kind of thing. And you could do that. I mean, I'm not going to bother.
This is, like, I don't know any of this stuff, if that wasn't abundantly clear already. But like, it's just so crazy to me. Like, we talk about the granularity of guitar stuff and how like, it's all about like the sum of the parts. And it's about, you know, there's a million factors into between you playing the guitar and what you're hearing out of your amp.
Yeah.
And like, God forbid you try to record that. Right? There's all these other things that not just make it more difficult. It's not more difficult. That's not what I'm saying. But it's, I don't know. It's almost like not worth relying too heavily on one single control point because it's just, it's all too variable.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I mean, tell me if I'm interpreting your your point here, right? But like, it, also on the other side of my mind, I find I'm thinking like, okay, so I just bought into this UAD thing.
Yeah.
What happens if I don't like Luna a year from now? You know?
Yeah.
And well, for one thing, everything except for the analog summing is not unique to Luna. They all are just plugins that I now own, and I can load them into Pro Tools or Reaper or anything. So the channel strip, the bus compressor, the preamp, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I would just drag them into the right spot to kind of sort of emulate this situation, right? In another DAW. That's why I think it's okay. I think it's okay.
Oh, yeah, I think it's okay too. You know. I need like a visual workflow of like how audio is processed in a DAW with all this kind of thing.
Right.
Like a flow. I need a flow chart sometimes. I doubt they have one because they're selling to people like you who already understand this. But
well, it's not just to me. I wonder if I can just let me. I'm going to, if this doesn't come up right away. I wonder if I show the, for God's sake, really? I'm trying. Derek can see my screen, but I haven't showed it on the thing yet. Oh my God.
Just search API.
Why didn't I? Because exactly. API. Okay. The Luna Vision Console Emulation Bundle. Okay, so this is the thing, and I'm going to put it on the screen now. Let's see if they have better graphics specifically for this. So, like, there's all the components of the channel strip, like, as they'll appear in...
Okay.
In across, like... So, when you have this, like, I can just make this be my channel interface in the DAW. It's just there with the kind of controls, the preamp... dynamic section, two different EQs, and then a bus compressor. You can use any of those or bypass them. It ends up looking like this, basically. Okay. So it fills out a certain section of the DAW, and then right underneath that is where all my other plugins would go. And you can see there's this, it's sort of blurry on the screen, but there's a little API vision icon, and that's how I would drag it around to place it in the order. So if I wanted it between two plugins... I could make all this shit go between them, and like,
is it just like top down in signal flow?
Otherwise, yeah, it's basically top down. So up above this, and like we'll go down. So here's sort of another view. So this is how Luna looks. Whenever you click on a channel, whatever you're working on appears on the left side, sort of zoomed in.
Okay.
So you have this sort of like blown up view to make it easy. So from the top down, like way up at the input is where the summing goes, and then it goes through. There's a slot for tape emulation. I don't have any of UAD's tape emulation. I rarely use tape emulation, but I use some on the master bus, but on individual channels, I usually don't. And then every one of these channels, so this vertically might be a guitar or a snare drum or whatever, and just clicking through so it can show the preamp, the dynamic section, or the EQ time.
Okay, yeah.
They're all on every channel, but it's a matter it's of like visualizing which one it is, or the bus compressor. And then beneath that, like we saw kind of up here, is where any other plugins I would want go, and then I can just place it. If I wanted the console to go between some other plugins, I could. Like you would, like if you had pitch correction, Melodyne or Auto-Tune or something, you would put that above, right?
Yeah.
Above the console. If you had drum triggers, you'd put that above, and so on.
Nice.
And the whole thing, and beyond Luna, like you're when you buy this particular thing that I bought, you're buying the plugins that can be used everywhere also.
Cool.
But the integration, I think, because if just these plugins, like, I don't know, I have plugins that can do this. And it's not like, I mean, these sound great, but it's not like I can't make things sound great otherwise. But it's that workflow of like every time I instantiate a new track, make a new track. Okay, here it is. And it's got your channel strip on it already. So, this needs a little more top. I do it. And because of that hardware integration, like I said, I push record enable on that track. I've dropped right back in. You know what I mean? And
the other thing is like this, you're saying things like you don't need it to make good music and stuff. And that's true. But like, and you didn't need it until you don't need it until you don't have it, right? So it's that thing where you're going to start yeah. using this, and it's going to just very effortlessly flow into your process and flow and like yeah. become a part of your workflow. And then someday you're going to open up Pro Tools and that's not going to be there or right. something else, right? You're going to have to do some other work right. and it's going to be like, oh, fuck.
Like, it's going to be like, I have to actually click and then type to filter the yeah. list and then click the one I want. Okay, now it's called up the API channel strip.
That's what I mean. Like, it's not the power of these things doesn't make itself like present until you don't have the ability to use it.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah.
you just slowly start integrating it into your workflow and you right. maybe rely on it in certain ways and stuff. And then suddenly when it's not there, it's like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. Like it really shines a light on what a killer setup yeah. it is.
Right.
So,
right. yeah. So anyway. I don't know. I said it before and I sound like a salesperson or whatever, but it's free. If you have UAD hardware, you should definitely check out Luna. If you don't, it's free. So it doesn't hurt anything.
And this is just to sort of tie this all up with a nice bow. Earlier yeah. today in Discord, you had mentioned you want to know if people find yeah. this part of the show interesting or helpful. Yeah. So chime in about that.
Right. Because a large part of what I was just talking about is not really guitar focused. So often steer my brain a little away when I'm on this show. And I just wondered so everybody in the 5 minutes I was looking at my phone was like, oh no, that sounds cool, even if they don't totally understand every bit of it.
Yeah. So like an early mission statement for this show was that we had these different backgrounds and could offer these different
sure.
angles on things. So like I'm always on board for it. I just often can't contribute very much.
yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, let us know.
Cool. I do think, you know, for what it's worth, I think the guitar-based workflow works. It works well for that too. And especially... It is, you know, hardware locked in that sense. But if you have yeah. like an Apollo or an Aero, one of the little USB powered ones that have DSP in them, you're into it. I mean, that'll do everything. Yeah. And, you know, so anyway,
that's enough. Get it.
So get it. Check it out. It's free. And if you don't have an interface and might want just a simple two channel, and you're looking at something in the sector of like a Focusrite Scarlett, which is sort of the king right now and is a very good interface.
Yeah.
The UAD's version of the UA's version of that, because it's not UAD, it's Universal Audio's Volt interfaces are
yeah, just I mean,
standard interfaces. And right now they're giving one away with a 1-year subscription to their plugin pack. So that's a hell of a deal. It's not like you're buying the interface for a lot less than it would normally cost, but you're getting this other thing to, and if you like it, you can keep subscribing to it, but you don't have to. So
I, for what it's worth, I use a Focusrite Scarlett Solo
yeah.
and to do everything, to do this show. When you hear guitar that's going through that on the show, all yeah. of the music things that I do on the side is through that little tiny box. So
yep.
you don't need much to really like start doing this stuff. But yeah, if you can kind of get in with the software and the hardware for low risk, why not?
Yeah, exactly. I think if I push the back arrow a few times, I think that deal that you'd be buying, I wonder if I can Google that quickly. Nudy Spark free Volt. Volt plus UAD plugins promo. Putting this on. Here the we thing. Go. I think I found it. Oh no, it's ending.
Oh no.
Well, if you decided to buy the Volt.
Oh, this is extended. This was over a long time ago.
Really?
Didn't it just say it ended in April? Scroll down. Extended through April 30th? Oh, no.
Oh, that's another.
That's something else. Yeah. Okay.
Wait. So is this an old Volt plus UAD plugins promotion? Hold on. I think I may have found the wrong thing.
Sweetwater's doing a deal too, as well, for holiday things on Volt stuff.
Okay. So a full year of Spark, which is all of the plugins that UID have made native versions of, non-hardware based versions of, costs $150 for the year, mm-hmm. and they will give you for free this.
The Vault 2.
And I think this is still running. I think this is going through the 31st because this is the current Engadget. This is written on December 2nd. I think I just found the wrong page before. So this is the Vault 2. It is a two-channel interface. It has two instrument inputs or two mic inputs.
It's inherently a little better than the one I have because it has the combo jacks. And I have one XLR and one line on mine.
Right. So this is two full and it's, you know, it's the UAD blah, Universal Audio's blah, blah, blah. Their circuit is so mm-hmm. great or something. I wouldn't expect them to be hugely higher quality than something like a Scarlett, which are they're all perfectly fine interfaces in this price range. But
they're also marketing this that it can go mobile. It's like you can plug it into an iPad and stuff. And now with Logic on iOS, iPad OS, mm-hmm. you can do that. That's a thing I have not considered.
They're basically interfaces in this kind of zone right now. These like two channels that are 100 or 150 bucks, four channels that are up to maybe 300. They are basically feature parity.
Yeah.
They have the direct monitoring. It's all done the same way with a little mix knob. They have two inputs. Some of them have, like, I think does Focusrite still have MIDI on the back of theirs? I'm not sure.
Not on this one.
The UAD one, the Universal Audio ones, the preamps have a vintage mode. It does something different with like a transformer couple that's in them. On the other hand, the Scarlett has its air mode.
Yeah.
The new version 4 of that Scarlett upgraded something about it, blah, blah, blah. Oh, you know what? The upgraded Scarlett has an auto gain. So basically you push a button and it'll listen to you play for 10 seconds and then set your gain. And it has like an always running kind of clip safe thing that'll adjust your gain on the fly if you clip.
That's cool.
So Scarlett has those great features too.
Will it destroy anything if I turn on my air button right now?
Not at all. It gives it a slight, very high lift. It's supposed to make it sound more like Focusrite's old preamps from the 80s when they became famous.
Oh, all right. Well, here I am. Do I sound like I'm from the 80s now? Because I just turned it off and now it's back on.
Very interesting to know. I'm sure I can't hear it over Discord. I can't even hear it
in my room here. Probably can, but
here's anyway. What I think. I think the air mode does a high frequency lift that is probably beyond the range of your microphone because we're using these large dynamic microphones, which tend to not really hear anything over 15 kilohertz anyway. So mm-hmm. There's no sound that could be affected by the air knob with that particular microphone.
The interface is like, yeah, great. Go ahead.
Yeah. Fucking do it, buddy.
Good luck.
Oh my God.
All right. Let's wrap this up.
Took a long time. Yes. So, Thing of the Week is happening. I'm going to play some sound. Nary an episode goes by that I don't play the Bit Commander sound. Here it is.
My Thing of the Week is a board game.
Yeah.
To be said to the surprise of no one. It's this game, Escape the Dark Castle.
But that's okay. Yeah. You can show it on your camera.
I see it here. I got both. Don't worry. Escape the Dark Castle is a pretty light tabletop RPG for 1 to 5.
It looks light the way you were waving it around like that.
It's because it's just a little. and it's a really fun, it's a really hard game. It's a co-op game.
Oh, okay.
And you are, the plot, if you care, is that you are just a prisoner in a dark castle and you're trying to escape. And
I love it.
It's the dark castle is this deck of giant cards and you are trying to get through the dark castle. And in every game, there's like a big stack of cards here. And 15 of them make up the castle at any given time. And so you shuffle them up. And so every time you play, you get a different castle to play through.
Right, right. It's a procedurally generated board game.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult. It's kind of like Dark Souls-y difficult that you die. And there's a lot of like, it's co-op as well. So you get to decide like as a group what you're doing. It comes with all these like special dice that are very rad. nice. For different like things, and your characters have their own dice that like have different abilities and stuff on them depending on the on like the stat roll of the character you're playing, mm-hmm. which is all fixed. Like you don't have to make a character here. Yeah. Like the Smith has like, it's got this awesome artwork style too. It's kind of like Metalocalypse a little bit.
I do you see that?
Yeah.
the what would you call that? Gritty unrealism? Like,
yeah, it's like woodblock print sort of, but like, so this guy's got like four strength, three wisdom and one vision or whatever it is. Like,
yeah.
And so you're trying to build amongst your players like a balanced team of all these like characters.
Yeah.
Because you have to roll certain, and like your die matches what their stat roll is and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So you're trying to effectively go against the enemies and stuff. And so one of the cool things about it is like not every enemy or not every encounter is a fight. Some of them are just like, this happened to you.
Yeah.
And depending on, there's also this mechanic about like who flips the card to the next chamber of the castle, and whatever it says may happen to only that player. So mm-hmm. it's not just like you can rotate around, you can negotiate who pulls the card next, because there's a risk if it says like you take two damage instead of like the party takes two damage. Like that means you personally.
That means your friend's got to punch you in the arm.
Yeah. For like whatever the encounter is, you know.
Yeah.
A haggard old woman appears out of nowhere and offers to read your fortune. Something in her eye speaks of a greater power. You feel it is wise to comply. And then it's like, it gives you like success and failure conditions based on your action and things like that. So yeah, it's easy to learn. It's really dark and like kind of, the descriptive language is very visual and very mm-hmm. like gruesome and grotesque and stuff. And it's quickly becoming a really, it's a favorite in our house already. We've played it a bunch of times since we picked it up at PAX, and it's fast because you die a lot.
Yeah. It says playtime 20 to 40 minutes. Now I've seen, you know, playtime written on the box of many of my board games.
They're always wrong.
I take twice as long to play board games as whoever makes board games.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it takes that long when you've been playing it every single day for a year and like you know what to, you know, every mechanic.
I have games like Terraforming Mars where it's like the box probably says like 30 to 60 minutes and I'm like, "Bitch, this is like a 10-minute setup."
Yeah.
And if I'm in a hurry, like what are you talking about?
It's like a 2-hour game all day.
Yeah.
this one is like, we have not beat it. We just keep eating shit basically.
Well, it's going to be really exciting when you do then.
Yeah. And because it's just the two of us. So it's really about like building an effective pair of players, right? With the characters in the game. And like, you know, if it's too hard and we just never win, like, well, I can start us with more health then and we'll get a little further, hopefully.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so it's really well done. There's also a version, like this is very like medieval and stuff. And there's a version that takes place in space on a, like an abandoned space station thing that was like attacked. And it's the same kind of idea, except all the enemies and all the encounters are very different. So Escape the Dark Castle. It's really fun.
Do it. Escape that dark castle.
Escape it.
Yeah.
Escape.
Escape. So my thing of the week, I don't know. Probably the VH4. Is that available outside of UAD stuff? I don't know. I've talked enough. I feel like I've talked more than my share in this episode. So I think it's a kick-ass amp. And the software version is very good.
That's one of the amps.
Yeah. I should say, because the version I have only works on UAD hardware, but Diesel with a Z, VH4.
Plugin Alliance?
So they
STL
do sell
has one.
The BrainWorks one. I'm looking for...
Yeah.
So, okay, I don't know why it's not coming up for me, but assuming the plugin. Oh, I should just put plugin after my search, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Plugin Alliance does sell it, which means it's definitely available as this is a native version. There he is.
Fucking Ola.
Ola making his faces. So there you go. Yeah. So this is, even though I have the UAD version, there's a native version there for you. You can run without UAD hardware. Although this one doesn't happen to be on sale for $44, but
yeah, well, fuck you.
It's worth $150 bucks for what it's worth.
Yeah, fair.
I think it's a fucking kick ass. It comes with a lot of great impulse responses, as we talked about on the last episode. It has an impulse loader. Oh, and all these BrainWorks plugins, by the way, that impulse loader you can just turn off.
Justin?
Yes.
You know what we didn't do?
What?
Set up the giveaway.
Oh, yeah. Well, like whatever. You said, we'll figure stall. It out. we'll just remind about the giveaway then. As keep we talked about on the last episode.
I have not
episode.
Sent a newsletter either. So keep an eye out for a newsletter with more info on this. If you're not on the newsletter, go ahead and sign up. It's in the show notes. We do not send a lot. I think we've sent 4 emails total. And like one of them was
like
telling you who the winner was for the last time. So get on the newsletter. We'll have like some instructions about it, but we're giving away an ML Sound Labs Mega Gent pack, courtesy of Doug. Patreon supporter Doug has donated this IR pack to the Tone Control for us to give away. So we're doing that. That's it.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
It's going to involve Discord, so get in Discord.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll have to join Discord and just click a thing. Yep. That's all.
Discord's free. And
no tweeting required, et cetera, et cetera.
No friend tagging, none of that. Nope. No following, no like and subscribe. But do that if you want.
We will definitely put that up. And so that means you're going to have 4 weeks to click that, because this episode is coming out on the 25th.
Christmas Day.
Christmas Day. And then we are doing our normal end of the year thing where we give ourselves a week off and I produce an episode that is just the bullshit that we cut off of the end of all the other episodes of the past year.
My favorite part of the year. takes me a week to listen to it. It's so long.
That will come out the 2 weeks after the 25th. And then we'll be back with another real episode, first real episode of the year in January after that. And that's when we'll pick the winner for this. So.
Yeah, so hey, cheers to 2023, guys.
Yeah.
Or four? What are we cheersing to?
I don't know.
Whatever. Hey, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Well done.
Merry Christmas, as you hear my voice.
Yeah.
Well done, holidays, circling. You know, all the holidays.
Merry holiday.
Merry happiness.
Let's call go.
It. Let's call late. It out. It's late. Yep. So then, yes, please join the mailing list and join Discord so you can participate in that. And if you want to support the show, you know how to do that too, because it's patreon.com/thetonecontrol. That's the correct way, and I know you can do it. And those patrons this week are... Nick Greenwood. Why are you already laughing? Nick Sorry. Greenwood, Carson Ricketts, Matthew Fenslaw, Ryzen Wolf, Brian Gower of the Tone Jerks podcast, Andrew Walsh of Andrew's Alcove, Sean Wright of Lollygagger Effects, Doug Gann, he doesn't have a name. That's what it says.
Eric's name has been changed a lot. 90% of the time, I feel like I'm responsible for it, and I always forget until Justin's like, and the patrons are. I'm like, fuck.
That's part of the game. The patrons are. What name can you come up with in these seconds?
Yeah.
No anyway, name this time.
Thanks for a good year, folks.
Yeah.
We'll see you in 2024. See you next year.
See you next year. Hi. Bye.